Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm not wasting these gold moments on 60 Minutes.
Oh, wow, Rob, what a treat and a joy to be talking to you.
Is that a Ben, Rob and Robbo exclusive?
I'm liking your new digs. This is flasher than any studio that I've ever worked in.
I want to come on this show all the time because no other show would ever set me up with that much room for danger.
Rob and Robbo.
Streaming across the globe, Ben Norris, Rob McKnight, and David Robinson.
Ben, Rob, and Robbo. News, entertainment, entertainment. It's the Ben, Rob, and Robbo. Ben, Rob, and Robbo. Ben, Rob, and Robbo show.
Welcome to the Ben, Rob, and Robbo show. Here's Rob McKnight.
Hello and welcome to Tipsy Thursday. Boys, Ben and Robbo, what are you drinking today?
I'm Everything. On the waters today. I'm on the
You're
water.
On water. Like, Robbo, you always say this? That and look I don't believe you.
Look at how sparkly that is.
Oh, that's fun though.
Look at that. That's fantastic.
That's a great way of drinking your vodka, that's for sure.
Yeah, well.
It's what about you, Ben?
Well, you know what? Normally I'm not drinking on a Thursday prior to the show, but today I've had a few, you know, just to get me going. And I drank it. So hopefully for my partner who's watching this in the other room, he can bring me another drink.
Well,
that
the show's
is a brilliant thing.
Off to a big start. Fantastic. Hey, look, there is a lot coming up today. We've got Joe Casamento talking about films actually returning to the cinema, except in Victoria, unfortunately, but the rest of the country, films are returning. This is big news, and we're going to look at one of the biggest ones coming to the cinema. But in the meantime, let's get to some breaking news. And in breaking news, the terrorist responsible for the Christchurch mosque massacres has been sentenced to life without parole. New Zealand Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern has just held a press conference reacting to the news.
Good afternoon. I want to start by acknowledging the strength of our Muslim community who shared their words in court over the past few days. You relive the horrific events of March 15 to chronicle what happened that day and the pain it has left behind. Nothing will take the pain away, but I hope you felt the arms of New Zealand around you through this whole process, and I hope you continue to feel that through all the days that follow. The trauma of March 15 is not easily healed, but today, I hope, is the last where we have any cause to hear or utter the name of the terrorist behind it. His deserves to be a lifetime of complete and utter silence.
Well, Andrew Costa, the Commissioner of Police, also shared his thoughts.
Look, the sentence is the strictest that can be handed down in this country. We're very satisfied with the outcome, but our focus today is on the victims and the courage that they showed in this situation.
Look, this is a first for New Zealand, and true crime expert Amanda Howard will be joining us a little later to dissect the whole proceeding. Robbo, there's ongoing debate over whether his name should never be said again. What do you think of that?
I actually really like it. That idea came out really fairly soon after the massacre happened, and I actually really do appreciate it. I think it's very strong. I think it's good leadership, and it's also a really good way of healing. Now, you know, we all know the name Martin Bryant, and, you know, thankfully we'll never see him walking the streets again, but I think there is a very powerful element of going, you know what, you're not going to be famous. You want to be famous in your circles, in your hate, and, you know, your awful circles that you mix in. You want to be famous. You want your name to be out there. But if the media in New Zealand and politicians and everyone just doesn't say his name, I think that's very powerful. And I think it takes away a very big piece of him, in other words, a legacy that he wishes that he could keep around. He's not going to get it. And I think that's fantastic.
I've actually got to say I disagree with you, Robbo. I think that we all have a right to know these monsters behind these attacks. We can learn from these stories. We can... Every time...
Well, we can certainly learn, but you don't need to name him. You don't need to name him to learn from him, do you?
That's part of news. We learn who this is. We learn who his associates are. We learn who the family are, you know, like...
But, Robbo, can I just...
I'm not saying we should ever go after the family, by the way. Sorry, Ben?
No. Look, can I just add something on top of that with what Robbo was saying? And I agree with Robbo on this one. I think that when it comes to glorifying people who have committed mass crimes, I think you take away that. And I think in this situation, you take it away from him, and that's a symbol to other people who are looking to glorify their own crimes and be known for them. And I'm not saying that's everybody. Like, not all people that are going to do crimes like these are people who are wanting their name out there. This particular person did seem like he was trying to get a message out
there.
And I think this is a really... New Zealand are good. Don't you think they're so good? I think the rest of the world needs to look more at New Zealand, because they definitely... You know, especially in the last five years...
This is censorship.
No, it's not.
We have the right to name and shame people.
But in this instance, he will be celebrated. Exactly what Ben says. I totally agree. He clearly wanted the people who support him.
Yeah, that's a minority of people who think...
But at the same time, though, I just think...
It's idiocy to think that what he did is okay. What he did is not okay.
Can you name one victim, and I'm not setting you up here, this is just going to prove my point, there's nothing bad against you, Rob. None of us can name, I think off the top of our head, any victims of the Port Arthur massacre, but we can name the killer. I think that's a problem. You know, and obviously we're not going to remember...
We're not celebrating the killer. But
I did not say we were celebrating.
I said the people who follow him.
All right.
I'm not accusing you of saying that. I think there's something powerful in knowing the name and having that name to be associated with an event. To me, it gives it more power as far as
not from
the depravity of it, but for the understanding and the anger towards it. This man did something so horrific.
Yes.
I want to name Brenton Tarrant. I want to be able to say, you little piece of poo,
But do you need to keep saying his name, though, in order for you to do that? We know his name. You know, we know of it. Do we need... New Zealand is taking this position where it's not going to say the name of the person. Now, we know his name, so it doesn't really take away from your argument, I don't think, that if to continually naming him, how does that, lessen or worsen... Anything.
So does that we should not name any serial killers or anything like that? True crime is one of the biggest.
I think this was podcasts in the podcast market. Yeah, no, I do agree with you, Rob, on that. I do, but I just think that they've made a decision on this with New Zealand. Sorry, but they've made a decision to go down this track, and I actually quite like it, and I appreciate it, and I respect it. We know his name, but they're just choosing not to publish it or say it. I like it. There's something powerful to see a prime minister step up and go, we're not going to talk about his name. We won't mention his name again. We're talking about his crimes, and we won't forget and we'll remember. I don't know. Yeah, I think that's powerful.
I'll give you the final word on this.
I think I just agree and disagree in certain parts of this. I mean, I don't think that Martin Bryant was trying to be memorable for his crimes. I think that is a completely different thing. But I think with this particular crime, with which what happened in New Zealand, is that this sends out a message to other extremists. And this man represents extremists, like other people out there that could possibly buy a gun and do the same thing. And that's what we're taking away. And that's what New Zealand is taking away. They're just taking away... Yeah, but you understand that you saying that true crime is important and you enjoy true crime. I don't like true crime.
No,
I don't listen to the podcast.
That's not what I'm saying.
I don't like glorifying crimes. It's not interesting to me. Wait for me to finish my point. And I just will say that I understand your passion for true crime and wanting to know that person's name and saying that they're a bad person and you playing that role. But when it comes to mass killings like this, which is somebody trying to get a message out there, you take away from that person everything that they want. And one of the main things they want is to be recognized and to be glorified.
This one did.
Because he live streamed this video, and I've got to tell you right now, it is. I have watched it. I watched it when it was coming into the 10 newsroom. It is something I will never forget. He also put up a manifesto. He was posting on websites. I agree with Ben. This man, his role was to, get immigration policy looked at in New Zealand, but also to be a hero amongst those awful people, that minority, yes. But that's what Ben is saying. And I agree with Ben. Martin Bryant wasn't doing it for that reason. So I get that difference. I really do.
I just need to say this. Not naming someone is not going to stop any of these crimes. They don't do it for the fame.
It is a huge part of it.
Fame may be part of it, but they're doing it because there is something wrong in their head.
You know, you take away everything, Rob. Like, that's the point that we're just trying to make. Where if that is just a small piece of the puzzle and you're considering it to be small, Robbo and I don't think it was small. We think this man wanted his name out there. He wanted people to watch him. Most people who stumbled across that video, it appeared on their timelines and people went, oh, it's a Facebook Live, and then started watching real people be murdered by a crazy person who was trying to create a message. Even if you're right and it's a small part of what he wanted, we take it away. Well, and look, we make sure that other people out there don't also feel like their names could be even celebrated in the smallest of circles.
We'll say probably our viewers agree with you guys. Let us know. I'm really keen to get some feedback on this issue. You know the hashtag. It's all the at is BRR show on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. Let us know your thoughts. Facebook's the best place for that on today's post of the video. Let's move on. And an angry mob of Black Lives Matter protesters have accosted diners on the streets of Washington, D.C. While many people in the group approach did, in fact, raise their hand in solidarity, there was one woman in particular who chose not to. Take a look at this. The woman copping all that was Lauren Victor, who is a supporter of the movement and has marched in protests before, but she said she didn't want to be forced to do anything in that situation. Ben, there's no denying that Black Lives Matter is incredibly important, so do the protesters have to resort to this to ensure that it remains in the headlines? I've got to say, Robbo, I found this appalling. I found it absolutely appalling. It's bullying. That footage I watch, I'm angry watching that footage. The woman is trying to social distance. She's got a mask on. They're encroaching on the 1.5 metres. They're bullying her into, we're not leaving until you raise that hand. This is appalling.
It is absolutely disgusting. And it sends the movement back, I think, to see those kind of scenes. We have seen other videos that have come out of America during the protests where a woman was, had a swastika on her arm or something, or had a flag outside of it, and obviously an angry mob kind of went up to her and said, get back in your house, and there was a confrontation. This is a woman who was sitting at a restaurant, minding her own business, and these mob of idiots who are screaming at her. Like, imagine how scared you would be, and then they're begging you and they're telling you to do that. It is absolutely terrifying. This is disgusting. So these people... Yes, Black Lives Matter, very important protest. This gets me really angry, Robin. I think you're angry too. Look at that image. That woman is on a chair.
That is scary.
She is having dinner. They are screaming at her in her face. Is that the right way to make change? I don't think so. Is this the way to not get change through quicker? Yes, I think so. Had they shot themselves in the foot? Yes. Should they be ashamed? Yes. That is disgusting behaviour. It makes me angry.
Ben, what do you think of that? Yeah. What would you have done in that situation? Would you have raised your fist?
The whole thing really bothers me. But I mean, I find protesting in this day and age is really bothering me. I think that we need to get smarter at the way in which we create and we get our messages out there. And I just think, you know, hate really does perpetuate hate, you know, and this particular Black Lives Matter movement is really made people distressed. And when you get distressed and you get, when you develop a lack of, like, as in, what's the word I'm looking for? It's like empathy. When you get really stressed and you don't know how to feel, you react badly. When fear becomes ingrained into you, when you're emotionally distressed, hate perpetuates hate. And that particular example, you know, is just, it's just foreign to me. Like, I can't even imagine. I don't know anyone that would join me in a protest like that. And I don't know anyone that thinks, I think we'd be hard pressed to find anyone who's watching the show right now that didn't find that confronting and agrees with it.
Not only confronting, but appalling. Absolutely appalling. I just can't fathom how anyone thinks that is okay. Whatever your political views, even if she disagreed, you know, like the fact is, she's marched in Black Lives Matter protests, but good on this woman for not succumbing to the pack mentality of being forced to do something. You have no right to intimidate someone to do your will. That is, it's just absolutely outrageous. Let's move on. And an art gallery in the United States has been forced to cancel and apologise for an upcoming exhibition. The gallery was putting together an exhibit that featured black artists and their work. However, it was the way they obtained the pieces that got them into hot water. Instead of directly dealing with the artists, the Whitney Museum of Art bought the pieces through a charity at a heavily discounted price. They also did not get the artists' permission. Instead, the Whitney told them they were honoured to show their works. Many artists voiced their frustration on social media, which eventually led to the gallery to cancel the exhibition and issue a grovelling apology. Ben, is this just artists being a bit sensitive, or does the gallery have a case to answer to?
I don't know. I'm so sorry. This is going to sound really unprofessional, but can you see my screen glitching? I don't know why, but I'm experiencing some severely bad internet. So I didn't see anything that just happened then. So you may need to explain it.
Basically, what has happened is an art gallery has gone to a charity, spent $100 buying some photographs, then used these photographs in an exhibition without the artist's permission. So the question becomes, did the gallery need to obtain the artist's permission, or once you sell those photos, are they out of your hands?
No, I think that they do need to ask the artist. I think the artist needs to be involved with stuff like that. You know, I think that, that's how I feel.
But why when, Robbo, I'm a little bit perplexed at this. You sell your goods. When you sell it to the other person, you don't have a right to decide what happens to it.
Yeah, but they did sell it though, Rob, in this understanding of where they would go. And it was to people who can't afford to actually buy, you know, proper art, but it allowed them to get art from artists who would normally fetch, obviously, a much, much higher price. This was the way of inclusion for the community, and that's where the difference is. When I first saw this article, I was also a bit perplexed because I'm like, well, the gallery is still a business and it's got to do things like that. But I do think that it was underhanded and cheeky and arrogant, actually, more arrogant. Because when they then reached out to the artists, they were like, it's such an honour to have your work. And the way that they were going to, which makes me think that they knew that they were being a bit dodgy, the way that they were going to compensate them further was they get a lifetime entry plus a guest into the gallery. So I think there was already an understanding of, we've done something dodgy here, but hopefully we can shut them up. That's the big difference.
That they did not give those works. I just think this is so precious.
Yeah, but they didn't give those. No, they didn't give their works to be bought up by a gallery that does have a $300 million budget.
You don't get to decide that. When you sell your work, you don't get to decide.
No, they sold their work. They sold their work to that particular company, to that not-for-profit, as a way to get those photographs to other people. They did not sell their work expecting it to be picked up by an art gallery. That's very different. Very different.
Robert,
because if an art gallery came along and said, I want to have your pictures, then you have to pay what they're worth. You can't buy it from a not-for-profit. That's not what they entered into.
There are certain things that I think need to have a classification on them, and this has been brought up before when someone tried to sell an Academy Award. There are certain things that have a difference about them and an association to them, and I think that there needs to be some kind of classification as to, you know, like a term or a condition
that comes with Academy Award. Or their Logie.
Because that's the terms and conditions of the Academy. So
now
if you get an Oscar and you want to get rid of it.
But it never used
no, it always
to be.
Has been. No. Yes, it is. You could only if you wanted to get rid of your Oscar
with Robert,
then the Academy would buy it for $1.
Yeah, that's
and you could
the
only
now.
Sell it to the
it
Academy.
It hasn't been that way since 1947.
I'm pretty sure it's always
What's
been
47?
In place, to be fair.
When the Oscars
No, that was
started.
The first year that the Oscars
no,
started.
No, that was 19.
But I love that you're such an Oscars.
Yeah.
Oh, was it?
I just made up a number, Robbo.
I love the Oscars.
Yeah, I know you did.
Oh, you did. Okay, can I just say, scrap every episode of the Ben, Rob and Robbo show that's ever happened because we just found a missing link in your chain or whatever it's called where you're now making up stuff.
No,
we
I just
no idea.
I made up a number to say
Amanda,
that when the Oscars
the
first started, the point
right,
was when the Oscars
underneath.
First started, they did not have it. It didn't come in until about the 90s, that rule you're talking about, when people were beginning
hold
to
on, sell how do we know that you just pulled out another number. I mean, we don't know if you. Yeah, we don't. Did Amanda laugh? Yes. That means it's a good thing she laughed.
She knows. This is the first time for us that he's admitted that he just made up stuff, but Amanda knows because she lives with him. So she's like, this happens all the time.
I've told you a thousand times, a million times, I do not over-exaggerate. And statistics show
And
look, seriously, 99% of the time I am not making up statistics. Okay, so
19. Okay, great. Okay, well, we'll just be mildly concerned of that 1%. Great,
this
fabulous.
Is
well, now
anyway,
to the biggest.
Have a drink. You'll
biggest,
be right.
I'll take a moment. We'll need a drink for this next story because.
Alcohol.
This is big news. If you love your Moe, or Moet really, Verve and Dom Perignon, you might want to stock up at your local Dan Murphy's now because it seems these brands could soon be off the shelf. After a dispute between Woolies and the French conglomerate, where Woolies refused to raise the prices of the already luxury brands, the supermarket group has been left with a dangerously low supply. I'm getting shaky just thinking about it. These top champagne brands alone generate more than $300 million a year in sales for Dan Murphy's, and they have even had to pull the products from their website because they're unable to keep up with demand. A spokesperson from Woolies said, "We're working with the supplier to improve product availability as soon as for our customers as soon as possible." Robbo, this won't affect you. You only like the passion pop.
Yeah, that's right. I'm like, Moet. Who's spending money on Moet? At least passion pop tastes nice. Moet's kind of like an abrasive. It's very abrasive. You could put it in your car and it would run your car for a couple of kilometres.
That's not true. I do like the Verve anyway. Yes, Ben?
Oh, the Verve, yeah.
This is almost like saying I don't like Kylie Minogue as a gay person. It's pretty outrageous. But I don't like champagne. I don't care.
You don't like champagne? I love champagne.
I know. As a gay man, everyone's like, oh, I'm gay. I'm in the bath having champagne. Oh, and I'm like, ooh, yuck. Give me a tinny any other day. And they aren't
Man of the
one.
People, David Robinson. Man of the people. I'm trying to
Here we go.
See it.
Drinking Verve.
Oh, we can kind of see it.
We've got such a professional outfit on this show. Let's go to the graphics now. And here are the graphics. Oh, my God. Yeah, well, that's for showbiz, mate. That's showbiz.
Right? We'll try and get it in properly.
No, that's anyway. All right. We didn't know we were doing this topic, Rob. We didn't know. So it just happened. It was breaking
no,
news.
No, it's just we it did just know. Occurred to me that I had
I know, I'm just
on the
teasing.
Window. I'll put it up on Instagram.
I just actually, I got
Yes,
it.
It's Robbo and I drinking
hey, just a
Verve,
quick update.
Actually.
Oh, well, I could see what that is. Like, I don't know, for the people playing at home, I mean... Unless they'd had too many champagnes themselves, I'm pretty sure they would have been able to see that image. I worked it out.
Good. Okay.
How's my internet going? Can I just say I'm coming from Melbourne. I think they've shut off the internet. I'm getting everything very delayed.
Well, you know what? We finally have the verdict from celebrity chef Jamie Oliver. Have a look at this.
bolognese. What is the appropriate abbreviation? For me and for the civilised world...
Just let Jamie answer the question.
It's spag bol. Yet Pete seems to want to call it spag bog. Who's correct? Oh,
really?
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much.
Well, let's, in the UK, a bog is a toilet.
Yes.
So if he wants to really call it a spaghetti toilet, I'm not a marketeer, but I think that probably the marketing on the spaghetti toilet's probably not a great bog.
Who would have thought it's spag bog?
I have heard of that. You know, I'm more refined. I say spaghetti bolognese.
Spag bol.
Yes. Oh, Robbo, you say it the way that my partner does, and that really gets my goat. And when I say goat, I mean a swear word, which I can't say on this show. But let me tell you, I don't understand. What is bolognese or whatever it is? I can't even say it. It's so ridiculous.
Spaghetti bolognese.
Do it again.
Oh, that was bad.
No.
Spaghetti bolognese. Shall I do that?
I don't know how to spell it though. I'll tell you that. No,
Mamma mia, we're going to have a bowl of spaghetti bolognese.
Oh my god! I don't know how. Like, I need to get a mic, like a button, put in here in this studio where I can cut that mic sometimes when he starts to do some accent.
Sorry, Robbo, I'm the only one with that power, and you're cut off.
Well, just to be confirmed, I also want to say, Amanda, are you still there? Because I'm assuming that when your husband embarrasses himself to this level, that you stop mixing the show and you just walk out. I think you just go shopping.
Let's see the white shot. We need to make sure that she's there. White shot, Amanda.
Go the white shot. Are you alive? Are you still there?
I love making you do that. That's fantastic.
She hates the white shot. All right, you know what? There is so much to come. We're going to get serious, and we're going to talk with Amanda Howard very shortly about the sentencing of the Christchurch massacre killer and find out why this is such a historic moment in New Zealand with the sentencing, because it's a sentence that's never been given to anyone.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
In the meantime, a big change of pace. It's time to talk movies with Joe Casamento. Joe, welcome to the show. Nice to see you again.
Hi, fellas. How are we?
Look, Tipsy Thursday is off to a flying start. So, Joe, finally, we say really that it has been a big week in the world of movies, and we can really say that, and we will get to that. But first, fill us in on who is going to replace Ruby Rose as Batwoman.
Yeah, this is an exciting one. Javicia Leslie, who you may not have heard of, she's in a show called The Family Business, but she is ready to become the first Black Batwoman. It is a big deal. She's replacing our very own Ruby Rose, who exited the series controversially earlier this year, which was seemed as very strange because, you know, it's not often a leading cast, you know, the lead star of a show actually opts out when a second season has been given the go-ahead. But that did happen, and Javicia is super excited to take over. She's the first Black Batwoman, as I said, and during a time when the Black Lives Matters movement is so strong, I couldn't think of a more sort of perfect casting. She's excited. She knows the significance of this herself. She said this week, "This really has nothing to do with me and everything to do with my people and with little Black girls."
A lifelong nice
Batman fan herself. Yeah, it gives me a little bit of goosebumps.
It's also interesting that she's not playing the same character, is she? She's actually not replacing Ruby Rose's character. She will be a different Batwoman.
She will. They're sort of working that into the plot because, of course, Ruby's character was actually a lesbian cousin of Bruce Wayne's, I think. So they've changed that a little bit and they're working it all in, but everyone's excited. And she, apparently her audition blew everyone away. It was on Zoom. That's the way everyone auditions in LA these days. And we will see it on Foxtel here when it arrives. So very exciting times ahead.
Joe, that is brilliant news. I'm very excited about that. Thank you for telling us that. Now, let's get on to something a little bit serious now, Joe, and it seems that Hollywood, quite rightly, is not ready to forgive Roman Polanski.
That's right. A Los Angeles judge thinks that the film director, who is not only known for his films, of course, but also for the charges of rape against him and as well as the murder of his wife, Sharon Tate, by the followers of Charles Manson, he has been going to court to try and get reinstated with the Academy, which, of course, brings us the Academy Awards. But the judges said, look, he got a fair opportunity to present evidence before he was booted from the Academy 2 years ago. He claims the Academy has failed to give him a fair opportunity to be heard. But he was actually booted alongside Bill Cosby and Harvey Weinstein for, you know, misconduct. So seems like he's not going to get back in no matter how hard his attorney is trying, and he's still trying in courts as we speak. So, I mean, I personally am happy to see that one still stick.
He's not living in America, though, is he? He's in another country, because if he comes back to the US, he will face charges, right?
That's exactly it. And that's the reason he hasn't been back to the US since the 1970s, I think, when he pled guilty to having, you know, sex with a teenager. He left for France and he has not been back. So, yes, he'll be in prison for, you know...
Come and present your case in person, Roman. Come and present your case in person.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to fall into that
trap.
I mean, he does make some very good films. And the interesting thing about Roman Polanski is that, you know, people like Meryl Streep and others still support him. You know, so it's very controversial that, you know, those allegations are there. But look, Joe, the wait is over. You said it wouldn't happen, but it did this week. Not once, but
it
twice.
Did.
What can you tell us?
And actually, for me, three times. But
and what about Joe? And what about the films you went to?
Yeah. But that's not unusual for me. But that's right, Ben. The two big film openings we're talking about this week is the big one. I've showed you the preview before, but I want to show it to you again. I'm talking, of course, about Tenet.
Oh, I can't wait to see this.
This is the film that is set to save global cinema. Well, that's what they're hoping. It's directed by British director Christopher Nolan, who's brought us so many great films. It stars Denzel Washington's son, John David Washington, and Robert Pattinson, as well as, among others, Michael Caine, Kenneth Branagh, and our own Elizabeth Debicki. It's out in cinemas today. You can see it on the big screen. You can set yourself up in a chair and roll back and get it cranking up and let it vibrate through your bones. Let's take a look at the film, which we are all hoping brings everyone back to the cinemas.
Tennis. Last time it was no tennis.
One of these bullets is like us, traveling forwards through time. The other one's going backwards. Can you tell which is which? How about now?
Why does it feel so strange?
You're not shooting the bullet. You're catching it.
Whoa. I done went back in my cell, felt like hell. Work, I risked it, pace yourself. How you living? Know you thrilling, office in it. How I got my stripes and pendants back and out in the street. One is wild, let it be. Rage is out, gotta eat. Not a vibe, but a way with the sound. By the way, counting down by the days.
Who's the American?
He seems nice. I invited him to the dinner.
It's good with fists for a diplomat.
There are people in the future who need us.
You got something.
Not gonna like it.
Time isn't the problem. Getting out alive is the problem.
Close to opera. Hit a red and blue outside. I think our options are. I'm a random, never had to line it up. I'll be
be swerving on the waves is like a line of game. Moving first on my turf, I'm out of line. I put in work, I draw the line and cross it first. I need the time, I need the search. It's just like want to make it work. Skirt, skirt, in a verse. Skirt, skirt.
You have no idea what you're getting yourself into if you go through that door.
It's slow motion when I dance.
Well, I'm going, so any tips will be welcome.
Ain't no time on facing scams.
What do you think we're seeing?
The detritus of a coming war.
You want to crash a plane? Well, how big a plane?
That part is a little dramatic.
Wow.
Oh my gosh.
Okay.
Can I just say, Christopher Nolan, he really does know how to do a trailer. Like all of his films, when the trailer drops, I remember Inception blew my mind.
Yeah.
But look, cinema goers have been absolutely starved, I would say. Joe, has it been worth the wait?
Well, first up, let me just say, if I'm not going to give any spoilers for this movie because I couldn't, because my mind is still trying to process what the hell I saw. Now,
I didn't do maths
in the HSC, but I kind of wish I did, because somewhere my brain cannot twist to quite understand the whole thing. I know it's fantastic, and I know when I work it out after maybe my fourth or fifth viewing, I'll actually get it. I know what I saw was visually spectacular. It was beyond anything I've ever seen. My mind was bent into so many twists and shapes. I think Kenneth Branagh, who's in it, and he plays this fantastic Russian, described it like a Russian doll. You know, you just keep unwrapping layers.
Yeah,
yeah.
You just and you never get to the end. It's a time-bending, time-twisting, it jumps back and forward. It's like things go in reverse. Things from the future come back to the past, and you can change the future.
So, did you like it?
How many
chop
tops?
I loved it, but I don't even know what the hell it was. It was
Joe. That reminds me.
Nolan fans will love. I'm going to give it.
Joe, I was just going to say that reminds me of this time. I was just going to say, it reminds me of that time I went to the cinemas and I just got a random Choc Top and I never knew what the flavor was, but I just was like, it was great, but I couldn't tell you if it was a pineapple flavor, whether it was the boysenberry. And I can tell you, I relate to you so much, Joe, because I still don't understand what happened in Inception, and I've seen Inception 5 times. I'm like, what?
Well, I can explain that to you, and when I see Tenet, Joe, I will explain that to you. But I'm sorry,
it.
I just missed. What did you say your score was? How many Choc Tops?
It's 4.5. I don't know if that's because I'm super excited, but it was amazing, unbelievable. But as I said, you do need subtitles or something to decipher it. I've decided it's like Shakespeare. You just got to go with it.
Yeah, right.
You don't understand, you just gotta feel it.
All right, Joe. I Am Woman. This is the second film that's coming to Stan. Tell me about it.
Okay, so this one releases on Stan tomorrow, Friday the 28th. I was fortunate enough to see it at my local cinema last night with the star herself, the girl who plays Helen Reddy. Yes, very exciting, but you can all catch it on Stan this weekend. We have discussed I Am Woman before. It's, of course, about the anthem that sort of empowered the 70s movement for women, with our very own Aussie star singer Helen Reddy in the lead role. I think we have a trailer for this as well. Are we going to... Do we have time to play it a little bit?
Yeah, let's have a look.
Yeah, let's give it a go. You'll get goosebumps.
Well, if you want to make it as a singer, America is where you need to be. I'm being paid less than the band.
So they're men. They've got families to feed.
Well, I've got a family to feed.
My mother tells me I have to choose between career and marriage. I tell her we can have both.
From now on, no one will tell us what we can and can't do.
Miss Reddy, you sing very nicely, but male groups all the rage right now. You've heard of the Beatles, right?
Did it ever occur to you men to ask women what they want to listen to?
Helen, she's tapped into something here.
Remember that march in New York and how many women showed up to that? Bunch of record sales marching down the street.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore.
It's kind of angry.
It's man-hating.
Jeff, you okay with this?
What are you doing? You want to lose your recording contract?
This is more than just a song to me.
Helen Reddy.
And I would like to thank God because she makes everything possible.
I am strong, strong. I am invincible, invincible. I am strong, strong.
I tell you what, Joe, Amanda just got goosebumps watching that.
No, I got goosebumps too.
I know, right, Amanda? Yeah. I don't know if it's just a woman thing, but there is something when you
That's why Robbo got goosebumps.
it is
I am
the
woman.
Song of a lifetime, and it's really quite an incredible story. I'm glad it's going straight to streaming and many more people will see it in their homes. I think it's one of those stories that lends itself to a bit of a home movie. Unlike Tenet, it's told, you know, very completely linear.
Yeah.
And it's simple. There's nothing to work out. But when you hear the song, it really is everything. And it's amazing the power of, you know, cottoning on to the zeitgeist of the time and how that can elevate something to something really special. Very simple story. It probably glossed over the feminist aspect on her behalf. Lovely, simple, but worth a watch. I'm going to give it 4 stars just because she's an Aussie and, you know, that's
so cool. You are the cheer squad. The film has been surrounded by a little bit of controversy and you can read that story on tvblackbox.com.au because the male co-writer of the song feels he's been left out, but we'll leave that story
He's not even in there.
No, exactly.
I was watching out after we discussed it.
Yeah, so, but still a good film. But, Joe, very quickly, Sean Connery is turning 90 this week.
That's right. Lots of throwbacks on at the cinema this weekend. If you love James Bond, get along. Sean, for me, there's no other James Bond. I don't know. What do you think, Rob? I don't think you can beat him.
I have never seen a James Bond film.
What the hell did you just say?
And you call yourself a gay man?
Hang on.
Yeah, sorry.
That blows my mind.
That's very true.
We're having some movie nights.
I think on TV once I saw a scene where he might have been in space about to have sex with someone. But that
Moonraker.
Is...
Moonraker.
Sure.
Yep.
You know, but that is. I mean, I do love the names, and I've seen.
Now you're
I've
talking
seen
his language.
But yes, I've never seen a James Bond film, and I think it might be Stan. That has all the James
Bond
films.
All. Yes.
And I have been thinking that I might start from the first one and have a look. But it's just one of those...
Amanda, you need to quarantine him. No, you don't know pop culture.
Yeah, because she wants me watching more TV, Joe.
Yeah, that's true.
Look,
maybe
Joe,
make it a family exercise.
Maybe.
Should we all say which one we like? I thought Skyfall was brilliant. Loved the song.
Oh, you love Daniel Craig. Yeah,
I loved Daniel Craig. When he got out of the ocean, I got out of my pants. It was amazing.
Okay, all right. Joe, thank you very much. We will see you next week. Thank you for all the information on the movies. Thank
Bye,
you.
Bye, Joe.
It's the Brand Life Shot of the Day. Where are you going today? You never know where you'll end up with the Brand Life Shot of the Day.
And today we're taking you to Rio de Janeiro. Yes, it's Brazil where there's a chance of rain, a top of 20 degrees and a low of 18 degrees. Robbo, it's Mardi Gras. I've got some beads if you take your top off.
What kind of beads have you got, though?
Beads?
I hope they're not anal beads.
Oh, my God. No, that's what they do at Mardi Gras. They give you beads around your neck if you show some
but
skin.
No, they don't. They put your beads up your bum. You've got it wrong.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
I'm so sorry I made the joke.
Now let's move on to feedback before this descends into chaos. Reggie says, cheers, boys. I'm having a vodka just after my gym session. Good on you.
Stop doing that voice. It's terrible. She doesn't sound like that.
I think she loves it when I do that voice.
Oh, bugger!
Leo says, I agree with Rob on this one. He's talking about the naming of the Christchurch gunman. Graham says he wanted attention. No, I don't doubt that. Andrew says, with true crime, we remember the serial killers' names, but rarely the victims' names.
Correct.
Jamie says, let's not give the name too much airtime. Gay says,
well done, Jamie.
Those who do hate crimes purely as a hate crime want notoriety. Take the power away with them.
Thank you, Gay.
Moving on to the Black Lives Matter protests that were forcing a woman to put her fist up in solidarity. Amanda says, I don't agree with stacks on no matter what the cause is. Liam, back on the Christchurch killer, says he and his name deserve to be erased from existence forever. Back on Black Lives, Reggie says, I would not have raised my fist. That poor woman would have been so scared by that angry man. Janelle says, newsflash, Rob, Dan Murphy's isn't the only alcohol seller in Australia, lol. Very good point, Janelle. We can still get the mullet and the verve. Good to hear. Gay says, gotta love a passion pop in a coffee cup, Robbo. Yes, that's...
Good girl. She's a good girl.
Reggie's on fire today. Bugger verb, drink the spearmanty. And she also says, Amanda, give Rob another maker's mark, please.
All right. And
that is our feedback. Hello, Ben.
Ben. Oh, hi.
Hello.
Are we back?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, I was Googling myself, obviously. You know, when I start drinking, obviously I'm obsessed with myself and I've just got to start getting on it.
Okay. Save it for after the show. Look, let's move back to our top story of the day, because on March 15th, 2019, New Zealand experienced what Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern described as one of the country's darkest days, when two mosques in Christchurch were the targets of a terror attack. 28-year-old white supremacist Brenton Tarrant gunned down 51 people, injuring 49 others during Friday prayer. It was the first mass shooting the country had seen in 22 years. And prior to this tragedy, New Zealand was named the second most peaceful country in the world. Since Monday, 4 days of hearings have been held leading up to the sentencing. And in a New Zealand first, Brenton Tarrant has been sentenced to life without parole. Here to talk to us about it is crime expert and serial killer whisperer, Amanda Howard. Amanda, welcome to the Ben, Rob and Robbo show.
Hi, guys. I sit here every day waiting to come on the show, and finally you let me come on.
Well, Amanda is my podcast partner. We do a true crime podcast called Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. Download it now in your favourite podcast feed. But, Amanda, this sentencing is actually a huge deal for New Zealand. They have never sentenced anyone to life without parole before. Why do you think they made the choice to do this and be so different?
Well, the first thing that a lot of people won't know is that life without parole was actually only introduced to New Zealand only 10 years ago. So right. Before that, the most they could do was life plus 10 years for each life. They don't do, you know, the 15 life sentences like the US does. So it is only 10 years, and there has been three people that have been sentenced since that time, but none of them have taken on this life without parole, because it's about the worst case scenario, and this is unfortunately one of the world's worst case scenarios.
So, Amanda, the previous longest without parole was 30 years. What did that person do to get convicted of that?
Well, he actually, his name's William Bell, and he actually killed three people and tried to kill a fourth during a bank robbery at an RSL sort of place. So he was given the 30 years, which is the maximum sentence before he's allowed to apply for parole. Even if this hadn't been a without parole, you still have to get parole once you're actually up for it. So a lot of these people will go a year on year on year, sometimes 5 years at a time, just to see if they can actually get parole, and they usually don't.
Sure.
Yeah, right. Well, Amanda, do you think that this historical decision will change the future of sentencing in New Zealand moving forward?
I think it will. I mean, what we have now is a yardstick, basically. So this is going to be the crime that they will compare every other case to in the country. God forbid anything even remotely close comes to this. But what you will see is that if someone has killed several people, that they'll say, is that in the same category as this case? Or is it, you know, a less category? And so we will say that they will get life, but they can't apply for parole for maybe 40 years.
Amanda, this sentencing comes with a guilty plea, but initially he pleaded not guilty to these charges. when there is video evidence, you and I have both seen the evidence, Robbo has seen it, there's no doubt in anyone's minds that he committed this offence. Why do criminals bother pleading not guilty?
Oh, well, this is actually a part of the legal system, because if you plead guilty up front, that's it. The case is over. You go straight to sentencing. By pleading not guilty to begin with, it gives them time to put the case together. It gives time to research, gives time to talk to witnesses and all of that. So they may find something like a mental health issue or anything like that that may come up. So they need to do this first plea because they have to put in a plea. So most of them do the not guilty to begin with, and some go through it completely and go through the trial and still get found guilty. Even if there is footage, you know, they can say that they were under influence of drugs, mental health issues, under duress and things like this. So it will always start there. And then obviously in cases like this, thank goodness for the victims involved, he did plead guilty at the end.
Well, look, over these hearings, we've seen a lot of victims and victims' families want to have their say and confront Brent and Taryn. 53 people from around the world have travelled to New Zealand. Why is this such an important part of the court proceedings?
Well, what this is it puts those impact statements onto the public record. So what happens there is that these people are able to continue to live their lives and know that they've spoken and their voice will be heard regardless of how many times someone may come up for parole. That emotion remains. And so if in 60 years' time he's an 80-year-old man and wants to get out of jail, the judge at the time, the parole hearing at the time, can read those statements again and say, no, there is too much pain here, there is too much hurt, and they cannot go forward with it.
So, Amina, can you take us through what these hearings have, you know, what we've learnt from these hearings and by what we've heard from listening to the victims?
It's been so heartbreaking to hear, and if you think back to the footage of those that have seen it, some of these victims who survived and were shot several times by the perpetrator, what they were able to do was lie there, pretend they were dead, and be shot over and over again. And it's those statements, I mean, I've got chills just even thinking about it, and they stood up and spoke and saying, I had to pretend to be dead to escape. And it is just so heartbreaking to see that this is what has happened. And, you know, some of them, there was a father and son who went to pray because their little grandson was actually in hospital and was very, very ill. They went to pray for help. And, you know, their lives were changed. They never came home. They never were able to hold that baby again. And, you know, there's just all of these people who were just going about their daily life. And the woman that was out the front, you know, I can still hear her voice, her family has seen this footage, and her family has had to live with this pain. And this pain is a bloodstain across New Zealand's history forever. And I think it's even worse to know that it's an Australian that perpetrated this, because, you know, we feel that New Zealand's, you know, our sibling, and to have one of ours hurt theirs, it's just horrific. Mm.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that I think will stick with people is we saw a really powerful moment with one of the victims who was hit by a bullet in the neck. We have some footage of that, check it out.
I did not see any rumors, any regrets, any shame in the eyes of this terrorist. And he does not regret anything. So I decided not to read my impact statement to show him that how much I suffer. Instead, I will show him that, thank you very much, that in this whole time, 17 years since I was living in New Zealand, and I was working, some of the people were calling me, because I was from Afghanistan, they were calling me as a fan or joke or intentionally a terrorist, but you took that name from me. Today you are called terrorist, and you proved that to the world that I was not, and us as a Muslim were not terrorists. I say to the people of New Zealand that I say to the people of New Zealand that terrorists do not have religion, race, and color. Any color, any race, and any face could be a terrorist. And we are not terrorists. We have suffered, but we are strong. My brothers and sisters suffered, but we are stronger than before. I was living this country after the attack, but you proved it, and you want me now to stay in this country forever. I will not leave this country, and this is my country, and this is my home. I came as a refugee to this country, and I will be not going from this country anywhere. So You are the loser, and we are the winners.
Wow. I tell you what, Amanda, I mean, it's a pretty powerful speech, and I actually think in some ways it probably has changed, you know, the way in which people attribute terrorism. I think very unfairly people have attributed certain races and religions. What are your thoughts? Do you think that this has maybe changed the face of terrorism?
I think we always expected to have a big part of that September 11 effect that we've had and the Islamophobia and things like that, that this actually proves the antithesis of that, that anyone can be a terrorist, that it doesn't have a race, it doesn't have a religion, as that witness just said. This is about that anyone with such strong beliefs can actually go and perpetrate something like this as a terrorist attack, and that we are calling him a terrorist, which is that is exactly what he is.
Amanda, I want to ask your opinion. One of the issues we brought up at the very top of the show was this idea about whether people like him should be named. What are your thoughts when it comes to the naming of a killer like this?
I mean, there's two different trains of thought for this, but for me, I think we need to name them because we don't want to forget that history. We don't want to realise that people can do these sorts of things, and it's heinous. You know, if we forget the name of Hitler, does that mean that it takes away that pain? It doesn't. So by using his name as a reference of hate, I think that has a powerful message that we can share, that, you know, we're not all like this, but there are people out there like this that can create such horrible events that, you know, that they go on live stream. You know, that is why he did that. He wanted to have his name out there. He put his face smack bang in the middle of the camera, so we all knew who he was. But we can't hide away from this person's name, because if we do, then we start to forget, and then the victims lose their name as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, Amanda Howard, thank you very much. You are my podcast partner, and I greatly respect you. You can hear more of Amanda at Monsters Who Murder, Serial Killer Confessions. She is the Serial Killer Whisperer, full of fascinating information. Amanda, we really appreciate you coming on the Ben Robin Robbo Show. Thanks for finally stopping by.
Thank you. I hope to be here again.
Well, I hope so too. Thanks, Amanda. We'll talk soon.
Thanks.
All right. Time for a bit of entertainment news with our good friend Ben. And Ben, tell me about the latest drama for Elton John. There's a bit going on with his ex-wife.
Yeah, I don't necessarily know whether or not there's enough goss in this for there to be a sequel to Rocket Man, but I will say one thing, and that is that where you have an ex hidden away when you're in the media, you always know they're going to come out with something. And Elton John has now accused his ex-wife, saying that she's just after the money, because these allegations have emerged. She's after $3 million from him. These shocking allegations that she has revealed has said that she tried to take her own life, which was in Saint-Tropez, when she was on their honeymoon. Now, famously, the two did get married here in Australia, and as we would know from the movie Rocket Man, it was not a great match. It was a bit of a mistake, I think, a bit of a blunder from Elton John, if you ask me. So anyway, look, the two were married in 1984 and stayed married till 1988, which is more exciting and mind-boggling than Expo 88. But look, at the end of the day, I don't necessarily think that she's going to get any of this money, but I definitely think she's going to get
the one thing. The one thing I always thought was he always spoke glowingly of her. She never spoke about him, so she honoured the silence. Something has made her come out now, and from reports, it was
cash.
The fact that
he's an ATM.
Well, he's saying cash. I think this woman has been set up pretty well, but she's saying that he broke the agreement when he spoke about their marriage in his latest book or something like that. So,
yeah,
I think there's more to it. I think the fact is, if she has respected him and not come out, she could have done a tell-all and all that kind of stuff. But if he's breaking the agreement, I get the feeling, and this has just been my take, that she has always felt, I've done the right thing, you haven't, and now you got to pay. But look, we are quickly running out of time. Tell me about the Batman comic. Tell me about what's happened here.
Okay, this is actually amazing. So I have been following this story for quite some time. It was a bit of an urban legend between Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones that they didn't get along on the set of Batman Forever in 1995. Well, it turns out that's right. And Jim Carrey a couple of years ago was featured on a live podcast, which if I can quickly set up the scene on this, is the moment that Jim Carrey apparently met Tommy Lee Jones in a restaurant, and he described it on this podcast about the awkward exchange. This is, you know, when they first met. Check it out.
We don't have that clip, Ben. You'll have to tell us.
Okay, well, that's disappointing because that is the whole segment and I really appreciated that. It's very funny. But I will say this, Jim Carrey and Tommy Lee Jones, when they met, Tommy Lee Jones said to Jim Carrey, I hate you. I actually hate you. And I think that you're crazy and I will not stand for your buffoonery. Anyway, Jim Carrey described this. Tommy Lee Jones has referenced it. It's a bit of like movie trivia. However, a detective comic has now come out with Harley Quinn, and in the detective comic, Batman actually says to Harley Quinn, I cannot sanction your buffoonery, which, by the way, is the exact quote from that interaction. Now, anyway, do we have any chance for that TikTok? That TikTok that you gave me is hilarious. It's really funny.
We've got to get back to Ticker. It's 2 o'clock. There's 13 seconds to go. We're going to have to see that TikTok on Monday. When we stream live around the world, we'll see you Monday. Thanks, boys. It's the Ben, Rob and Robbo, Ben, Rob and Robbo, Ben, Rob and Robbo Show.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.